Welcome to Box Box Box, the Aussie F1 podcast. In this week's episode, we review the Australian Formula One Grand Prix in Melbourne and break down all the ins and outs of race one. If you haven't yet, be sure to follow us on Twitter at BoxAussieF1. Give us a like on Facebook and be sure to tell all your mates. So strap yourself in, pour yourself a shoey of your favourite beverage and enjoy the ride. Boys, welcome to the post-race edition for the Australian Grand Prix. Daniel Ball and Michael Niccolo here in the studio. Guys, welcome.
G'day, Izzy.
G'day, how are you going?
Good, good, good. So, yeah, thanks for joining me again. We had a very, very interesting race on Sunday afternoon. And Daniel, you and I got the, we were very lucky to get across to Melbourne and see the Grand Prix.
Yes, it was a mad dash over on Saturday night, arriving at 3 a.m. on Sunday. And two bleary-eyed guys dragged themselves into the track. Very excited, like kids in a candy store.
Definitely, like kids in a candy store. And yeah, we run around like, you know, chooks around their head, cut off a lot of the day. But it was a really, really fun experience. And I've been twice before. And I think the group that we had.
This was Daniel's first time, wasn't it?
This is my first time to a hybrid race. The last time I went was. I worked out was back in 1989.
Wow.
To this Adelaide Grand Prix.
Yep. That's, yeah, going back. It's 20 years ago, mate. Yeah,
don't tell me that. Actually, it's closer to 30.
Yeah, 30 years ago. Wow. Yeah, my maths is up the wazoo. Hey, so what did you think, Dan, after, you know, we got there? It was a mad dash to get there. What were your impressions, mate, of the overall, the track, the weather?
The weather was fantastic. I mean, that was blue sky. I woke up in the morning and it was overcast, but when we got there, it
was beautiful.
Four seasons in a day, typical Melbourne weather.
It was really weird. Like, it was real smoggy and looked like it was going to be a real foggy day. And then, you know, all of a sudden it just turned it on, Melbourne. Yeah. You brought the weather on Sunday, for
they
sure.
Did. Absolutely. Going to the track, hearing the cars live, people complain about the sound of the cars.
How did they sound?
Good. They sound glorious, man. Like, they're actually a little bit louder than what you expect, like, from hearing on the TV.
Were they louder than the V8 supercars?
About on par.
Yeah, about on par. But what
did it give you that shudder, that feeling through your body?
No. Actually, but the V8s might have been a little bit louder, actually. Yeah.
What I did like was we were at the far chicane and you'd hear them come in and you'd hear the crack from the pop of the engine as they downshifted to go through that or lift off to go through that. And that was just really nice to hear. And the little vortices coming off when you're down the straight. You see the little wind vortices come off the back spoiler.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was fantastic to watch.
Yep. Yeah, and one thing that struck me was, you know, when you're looking, we're at the back straight at one point, looking towards before there's like a left-hander and right-hander. I think it's around
that. Yeah, that's the chicane.
Yeah, turn 13, 14 maybe. Yep. Turn 11 and 12, I think. Anyhow, after the main straight. And we're looking down towards, you know, where they turn left for that chicane. And just the speed that they take that left-hander in, it's phenomenal. And you can't capture that on the camera. You know, with your naked eye, it looks phenomenally quick. And then you go to take a video of it and, you know, it doesn't look spectacular.
Yeah.
So to actually see it with your, you know, the naked eye, yeah, it's a real, real treat. And, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Any other highlights of the track, the way that Melbourne put it on?
There was lots of events around the track. There's lots of cars on show, Formula One cars. I got to see my favourite car, the McLaren Senna.
Yeah.
My dream car, so I got to drool over that for a little bit while wandering around.
The Ferrari Monza was there as well. That was very cool. It's just like a single-seater.
Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful car.
Yeah.
You also took in the opportunity to deck yourself out with some threads, mate.
I did. We went in on Sunday. There was no Danny Ricciardo merchandise left from Renault. He had his own personal stuff there. So I got a Danny Ricciardo shirt, hat, and I also got a Renault T-shirt. I'm a sucker. What can I say?
Not cheap as well, mate. You spent a small fortune there. It's like
I did. I spent
His wife's not listening, is she? Yeah.
No, she's fully aware. She gave me authorization before I left. I made sure I got that.
She approved the spend on the card.
Yes, she did.
No, it was an awesome day. I really you know, had a great experience, would do it again. Happy to go back next year. Next year, perhaps we'll maybe go on as a group, all of us together, and see.
Media if we, accreditations.
Yeah, that'd be pretty wild. The other thing we did do, we took our t-shirts, the box t-shirts. We had my brother Mark with us as well, and we actually, you know, we bumped into a couple of guys who were doing some interviews and recording for the Netflix doco, what's the name of the doco?
Drive to Survive.
Drive to Survive, which if you haven't seen it, guys, I'd really suggest you check that out. We've all watched it here, or we're in the midst of watching it. It's an absolutely phenomenal documentary, and we actually
got we'll have to devote like a segment to go on over that.
I think we need to.
We have a work colleague, and she had no interest in Formula One at all. She happened to watch Drive to Survive, and she came in crying to us about it, how amazing it was. And now she's coming up to me going, oh, I really hope Danny Rick does better this year with Renault and all the rest of it.
So she's hooked. How much has it broadened the audience of F1? It's a really good idea. And
imagine if she watched the Senna documentary.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We got interviewed on that, and look, you know, it's highly unlikely that we're going to get on the Netflix, next series, but hey, we never know. But, look, thank you to anybody who happened to be at the race and we had a chat with. We really appreciate all of your feedback. We'd love to hear you on Twitter, on our Facebook page. We do have a website as well, www.boxboxboxf1.com. So look, any way that you can get in contact with us, guys, we'd love to have you as part of the show. Maybe we'll get you in as a phone-in guest or something like that. But let's move on from that, guys. Let's
just before we move on to talk about the race, one of the big things that I kept seeing in the coverage of the F1 was Charlie Whiting.
Absolutely, yep.
So for those of you out there that don't know, Charlie was the race director. He was, you know,
he's the man who called the red flags.
Yeah, if something happened at the race, he'd be in charge of, well, is this safety. Okay? And is it safe? Is it punishable? You know, what's the outcome here? Multiple times on the weekend, I heard Martin Brundle refer to him as the judge, jury, and executioner.
Correct.
In F1. And the way everyone spoke and the respect that they had for him, the love that they had for him, the admiration, it was touching. But you guys being there, what was it like? Was it somber? Was it, did they do anything to...
They did do that minute of silence.
They had a minute of silence, which was quite interesting. The cars had all gone around, did their warm-up laps. So you heard the roar of the cars going around and the scream of the...
engines.
The engines and people around the track being excited when they saw Daniel Ric come flying past or their favourite team. And then they had a minute of silence after they'd all gone on the track. And it was quite
very
eerie.
It was very respectful. It was eerie. I closed my eyes for a few moments and, you know, had a thought for him and his family. It was a touching moment that I think, well done by everybody in the F1 fraternity.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the race, guys. It was a huge race, massive race, but probably the most anticipated start to a season in the last 3 or 4 years, I think.
Yeah, yep. That's fair call.
Absolutely.
Lots has happened in the off season. We talked about the testing over the last episode. Let's talk about our overall impressions of the race to start with, maybe, guys.
It was an interesting race for me. It was dramatic without being overly eventful. But there was a lot of talking points that, and we'll go through it today. But I thought it was a really entertaining race. Valtteri Bottas.
I think
who is this guy? Where's he been? Has he been in Formula One before?
we owe Valtteri an apology. Last episode, we stuck the knife into him quite harshly, saying that he was going to be the bridesmaid. He's not a world champion. Do you know what? He's grown a beard over the summer break.
I reckon he's listening to our podcast.
He must be.
Did you hear what he said when he crossed the line?
Yes.
You want to repeat it?
To whom
it
may concern? You.
So I think he was talking us.
I think he was. So Valtteri, from us here at Box 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 and Aussie F1 podcast, we're sorry for being
bastards. We're very sorry, Valtteri.
He suddenly got the see you in the NT moment, and I think that's what you need to be a world champion, is to be a bit of a see you in the NT.
I couldn't believe how well he did. I mean, his qualifying effort, you know, he came out in Q3, just blitzed everyone in the first run. It was an amazing lap from Hamilton that just pipped him.
But it wasn't,
you know, it was surprising.
He wasn't miles behind Hamilton. He was a couple of tenths behind.
Hamilton only just pipped him. Very surprising. You got to feel for Esteban Ocon. He would have been sitting there thinking, "Oh,
this is my chance.
There goes my drive for next year.
Halfway through the season, could I be in this car? It's gone."
Yeah.
I don't know if it's gone completely. I mean, you can
see. That guy who won the Melbourne Grand Prix, if he rocks up to every other race like that, he's a world championship contender.
Absolutely. But very similar to what happened to Vettel last year, you get under. A driver gets under your skin and you can turn over and lose the championship. So hopefully Valtteri does it to Hamilton this year and gets under his skin, similar to Nico did back in 2016.
And it's not that we don't want to see Lewis do well. We want to see everybody do well, but we don't want to see Lewis winning every single year. And not necessarily even Mercedes winning every single year. We want change. We want competition. We want excitement. And the Valtteri winning on the weekend, he was all of that, you know, and I think it was a very welcome change.
And he had a commanding race. Like he just sat there and, you know, he took the lead from the first corner and maintained that, pulled a gap up to 20 plus seconds and won the race by 20 seconds at the end.
What does it say about Hamilton? Was Hamilton off his game? I know they've come out now and they've said, oh, yeah, there was a problem with the underside of the car.
Some floor damage.
Yeah. Was there?
I don't think Hamilton's off his game. Drivers always have off races. They always have. It might have been an off day for him. He might have had a car that wasn't that crash hot. And Bottas just enjoyed the car better.
Yeah. Well, he definitely did enjoy that car. And Lewis congratulated Valtteri on winning. And, you know, his team, he thanked his team. And who knows? Like, I think we're going to crystal ball here too much. I don't think we should crystal ball too much.
You can't tell off the one race.
You know, look, you did have a very interesting statistic that you read out to us prior to us starting the show, Mikey, about the next race. Do you want to share that now?
Well, in 2015, Hamilton won the Australian GP, then he went on to win in Bahrain.
Yep.
In 2016, Nico Rosberg, Aussie GP winner.
Yep.
Won in Bahrain. And then in 17 and 18, Sebastian, we know he's back-to-back winner in Australia. It was all over the news. And he also went to Bahrain and won. So that was really, really interesting
To summarize that, last 4 years, whoever's won the Aussie Grand Prix in the last 4 years has also won the Bahrain GP. Yep.
And the other one is when the drivers have got a 1-2,
they've won the championship
and the constructors' championship, drivers and constructors.
Yep. Okay, cool.
Yeah, the stats show that the winner of the Australian Grand Prix and, you know, when they come 1-2, there's a high probability that driver and that constructor are going to win.
Takes a championship.
Mm.
So it'd be good to see.
Just one other thing before we move on from the Mercedes team, guys. One other interesting point about the Aussie GP is that this is another stat that I learned from you, Mikey, I think. 7 of the 8 last Grand Prix in Australia, shouldn't say Adelaide, people are going to start smacking me on the head, were won by non-pole position winners.
Yep.
So that's
in the last 8 Australian Grand Prix, the guy on pole position has won one of them.
Yep. That's a pretty damning statistic for that side of the grid, isn't it? What is it? Is it the track has too many? Because is it on the outside? I can't remember if it's on the outside or on the inside.
I think it's on the racing line.
Yeah.
But isn't that odd? But on the second place, you come up on the inside of the corner. So you actually sort of hold that first corner, I think, a little bit. And then you go into corner 2 and you're on the outside.
Yeah.
And you're able to sort of cut across, I think, a little bit.
Have they got that wrong? Do the race organisers need to switch the grid side?
Well, it's hard. I mean, there's a lot of things at play.
Yeah.
I don't think Lewis got the best start and Valtteri got an amazing start.
Yeah.
You know, is it, you know, is one side of the grid dirty and the other? Is that what it is? I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, being the first race of the season, there's a lot of variables, you know, trying to get the car off the grid.
I think
well, Valtteri a lot of things come into play. I don't think we necessarily need to.
I think Valtteri got it hooked up really well. You heard Hamilton take off, and some of the videos that I've watched, you can hear the wheels spinning up as Valtteri just it digs in and just pulls away. Yep. So I think Valtteri got just a cracker of a start.
Yeah, that finish traction control.
Correct. Yeah. The right foot.
Yeah. All right, guys. So Mercedes obviously did very well. Valtteri won. Mercedes, Lewis came second. What about, you know, Ferrari, Red Bull? Let's talk about the guys, you know, obviously Verstappen came third.
I'm surprised by that Honda engine. They had 60 races with McLaren, didn't get a podium. Red Bull, one race, one podium.
What does that say? Is it, have they dramatically improved that engine? Or does that engine and the Red Bull partnership just work really well together?
I think a bit of both. I think they've improved that engine. They've got more horsepower out of that engine over the last few years, or particularly last year. And I also think the Red Bull packaging. So Red Bull, I think Christian Horner came out and said when they first agreed on the engine for this year, Christian Horner came out and said, make the power. We'll fit it into the car.
He also said they've never had a power unit fit in so seamlessly.
Okay, I haven't heard that one yet.
But you're
not gonna, you know, you don't expect him to come out and say, oh, you know, we've had a really beat that one out. You know, we've had a really hard time fit this engine and a lot of problems with Honda. I mean, they really had a tumultuous relationship with Renault at the end there, and I don't think they want to get off on the wrong foot with Honda. So there's going to be a lot of you know, positive coming from Christian and Red Bull. For me, it was interesting. I mean, Max did a really good job, drove that car so well.
The overtake on Vettel.
Pierre Gasly. I was sitting there thinking, you know, he's not getting past Kvyat. How long will it be before Kvyat has that seat at Red Bull? Is that something that could happen?
Oh, absolutely. We've seen it happen like before. And he lost the seat to Max.
Qualifying was horrible.
Well, no, it was qualifying that they decided not to put him back out again in Q3. They thought he had a sufficiently good enough time. It clearly wasn't, because he got bumped out in Q3, and it was a bit of a shock, I think, to Helmut and Christian that he got knocked out. But in saying that, jumping from one car to another car, I don't think they slot in straight away and they get very comfortable with it straight away. I think you've got to allow a couple of races for Pierre to get his head around the team and his head around that car before you can actually start judging him on, you know, whether he's good or bad. He should have done better. I mean, if that was Max that qualified in, what was it, 13th position, 14th position?
Yep.
He would have torn through that pack.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah, Pierre no good at this stage, but the jury's still out. And Max has taken the package with Honda and Red Bull and just grabbed the Red Bull.
The ball by the horns.
Yeah, great minds think alike. Or
small ones never differ.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so Red Bull, they've obviously started the season better than they have the last couple of seasons. So it looks like a positive for them.
Look, they both made it to the end of the race.
Yeah.
That's going to be the big question about the Honda engine, I think, is longevity. How's it going to go, you know, in 4 or 5 races' time? Is it still going to be any good, or is it going to be blowing up MGUK units or turbos or power units?
Did anyone catch what Red Bull said after the podium?
No,
I think it, I think it was on social media. I don't know if it was Christian himself or whether it was Red Bull.
Was it a statement of some sort?
Yeah, they emulated what Fernando Alonso said a couple of years ago. Now we can challenge.
Right.
Was the hashtag they used.
Yeah.
A little dig at, I guess, at Fernando and I guess vengeance for Honda. That was when Alonso did it, it was a sledge at Honda.
Yep.
After the switch to Renault, wasn't
when
it?
When they went to Renault and no more GP2 engine, as Alonso called it.
Well, McLaren must be almost kicking themselves by now, I think, is that if they've jumped to Renault and now they're going, this Honda engine's beating us out on the track.
The one team that'll be kicking themselves is Ferrari. Where did it go wrong?
Oh, man.
What happened? They looked so promising in preseason.
Yeah. Looked amazing in preseason. They were cheering and thinking they're great. Or was Mercedes sandbagging?
Well, I was just about to say, we asked the question when we covered the testing in our podcast, was Mercedes sandbagging? Clearly. Yes, they were.
Yeah, clearly they were. Absolutely.
So, you know, Hamilton's a great actor.
You should get an Oscar for that one.
Yeah, you know, led us all to believe that it was going to be closer than it was, and they've just absolutely run away with it. Was do you think Ferrari will be this bad all year, or
no,
was there something?
Absolutely not. They've got the money, they've got the resources, they've got the knowledge. They'll come out and they'll go, where did we go wrong? What did we do? They'll analyze and go through every fine little detail on that car and go, where have we gone wrong? And they'll fix it.
I mean, Sebastian put it third. He got third in qualifying. But that car just didn't seem. It just wasn't quick. It looked like it looked fine on the track. The Mercedes looked very stiff on the track, and
absolutely, it was bouncing over the curbs a lot more.
The Ferrari looked very composed, but it just was not quick, and that is scary because you know Ferrari have won at Albert Park the last 2 years.
Yep.
To come and be so uncompetitive,
yeah,
it's got to be alarming. And I mean, you know, you got to remember they've brought in Leclerc. There's been a bit of a clean out in house. They've gotten rid of my favorite there, Oliver Bernier.
Yep.
Marlboro man.
Yeah, you know, the Silver Fox. He's gone. You know, you made a lot of changes, and has it been for the better?
I think long term, yes, it will be. I really do. This is going to hurt me, but the team orders that were given.
Oh, yeah.
That was clear.
You want to hand over that bottle of Jack Daniels now?
Not yet, because I still reckon Leclerc has still got a chance. They had, that was clear and concise. The message came over, do not overtake. It was clear and concise. It was no arguments.
Do not overtake and leave a bit of a gap.
Yeah, back off and let him go. Leclerc's size were, I think, 7 or 8 laps younger than Vettel's. Came up quicker on him, could have easily overtaken him. I think Leclerc, multi 21 on Vettel, please.
Yeah, okay, this is interesting, guys. Yeah, looking at the fastest laps, I think there's promise within Charles Leclerc. So he actually got the 4th quickest lap of the race at a 1:26.9. Seb Vettel, he was the 8th fastest at 1:27.9. That's a full second difference, a whole second.
He's half 1.5 seconds slower than Bottas.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that is a phenomenal, you know, figure in itself. But what, I mean, just getting back to Ferrari for a sec before we compare other lap times, that team order at the end, you know, don't pass Seb. Was there an issue with Seb's car? You know, if Charles was a lot quicker, even though he did have quicker tires, you know, should they have let him pass? What do you think?
Well, Sebastian was complaining, why is the car so slow?
Yep.
So Ferrari aren't very open and honest and willing to come out and tell us what's wrong. That's how they are. You'd think there was a problem. You'd hope there was a problem and it wasn't just that's the car. But this is what Ferrari do. They back their number one guy. Seb's their number one guy, and they just showed the whole world Seb's number one. Charles, you're there to be backup, and that's the status quo.
See, but I think that at this stage of the game can damage your long-term goals of world championships and constructors championships. Because if you invest, put all your eggs in one basket with Vettel and you don't let them race to start off with, or you don't let the fastest driver go, you may end up at the other end of the series, in the end of the championship, struggling for a position.
Well, if you've got your number one guy struggling, and the new rookie who's walked into the team, you let him pass your four-time world champion. What's that going to do for Seb? What's that going to do for his state of mind?
Exactly what I want him to do. Win me my bottle of scotch.
They're backing Seb. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. That's how Ferrari do it, and that's fine.
I understand. That's the way Ferrari has always done it.
Not everyone does the same thing, but that's how they do it. 2 extra points go to Seb. I'm content with that. I mean, you think about it, if Ferrari get their act together and at the end of the season we're looking at it and, you know, Seb and Lewis and maybe even Bottas are fighting for the championship, those 2 points could be invaluable.
But you could have let Leclerc go, he potentially could have challenged Verstappen for third place. So they could have been further up the table.
I don't think he would have caught Max.
Leclerc's fastest time is a 126.9 and Max was 126.2.
And their fastest laps, not.
But look at the difference in times. You know, Max was an extra 35 seconds up the road from where Seb finished. He wouldn't have caught him, Dan. But yeah, I think they still probably should have let him pass. I just think it's a little bit early in the season to play those sort of team orders, personally. But you know, look, Ferrari have their own way of doing things, and you know, you don't mess with the Zohan. Moving on to,
I think we need to talk about what everyone in Australia has been thinking and talking about. That's Danny Rick.
Yeah, Rick.
We got to go to Danny Rick.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. So, we were both there, obviously.
Yeah.
Not a great start.
Not a great start at all.
He had a ripper start. Perez didn't take off as well. He got a ripper start, had nowhere to go, went out a little bit on the wide side and ended up in the grass. And found a gutter.
He found a gap between the grass. So the car came crashing down on a bit of concrete.
Yeah, bitumen or something like
that.
We walked the track afterwards and you couldn't even really see. Like we walked that strip.
I worked it out afterwards. We walked over it. So it was basically at where the last wall was for pit lane exit. There is a section and it's just
like a footpath.
It's a footpath
across
the grass. And that grass is quite deep and quite high. So as he's come off the top of one side of the grass, the car's dropped down. There's a big chunk of grass in front of him that he's then hit, has caught the front wing and just torn it out from underneath him.
I've got to say to, you know, as great as Melbourne do everything, that should not be on the track.
Well, should he be off the track?
But, technically no. But they're allowed to have one side of each axle off the track. And technically he wasn't out of the rules.
It was either that or he potentially collides into Perez.
Yeah.
Or runs up the back of another driver. So he made the right decision, I believe.
Yeah.
To move onto the grass.
And it was
it wasn't the right decision because
he should have known about that. You know, these drivers do a track walk, so they know about, you know, the dangerous points and things like that. That probably should have been picked up and flagged.
Did he have another issue with the car after? Do you think, or do you think that
there would have been under floor damage? I think they weren't going to get into the points. So then you're quite right. I think it's a technical decision. You
remember those motors? They got to last. There's three motors for the whole year. We've got 21 races.
Seven races each.
So then it becomes we're not going to end up in the points. We're better off saving our motors so we don't take penalties.
I think we're going to see that a lot this year.
Yeah.
I think if any of the guys who are normally up the front fall back, have an incident first lap, I reckon they'll be retiring them if they don't catch up pretty quickly. Mm. Save the motor.
Which is disappointing, I think, from a spectator's point of view.
Yeah.
If you want to, you know, I'd love to see, you know, Hamilton lose a front wing and then jump back on the track and blitz to try and win the races, you know, like many drivers have done over the years. You know, Raikkonen's done it. You know, they've all done it. But if they start going, no, let's retire the car to save our engines because of the rules, otherwise we'll take penalties, I just don't think that's good racing.
Yeah.
If Liberty Media is listening, get in contact with us. We can fix F1 for you.
Fuel stops.
Fuel stops, more engines. Just give us the checkbook.
Now, whilst we're just finishing up with Dan, we should probably talk quickly about the Renault in general. It's hard to really get a guide just based on Hulk's run. Where did Hulk finish? Finished about seventh, didn't he?
Seventh, I think he finished up.
Seventh.
Which I think is a good drive from him.
How did he go with his lap times? That's he was 12th overall in the lap times at 128.4. So his quickest lap was was just under 3 seconds slower than Valtteri Bottas's fastest lap. So man, I think it's going to be a long season for Renault, to be honest. And
they'll end up behind Haas, I think, this year. They'll end up fifth in the championship. Haas will beat them, I think, because Haas looked like a really strong car at Melbourne compared to the Renault.
You know, Daniel, switching from Red Bull to Renault, and every Aussie is probably thinking, has he made the right decision? Too early to tell, but that if you take it on that first race alone, yeah, it is a long game. And
I think Cyril was up front with him and said, you're not winning races. You're not going to be even in the podium this year. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
You may be able to pick up a scrap of a podium, but chances are probably not.
Yeah.
So 2020,
their sights set on the rule regs changes in 2021. Yeah.
That's what they're looking for.
Yeah. So interesting times for Renault. Long slog.
Before we move on the topic of Daniel, the hysteria that we've had here for Daniel.
Oh, absolutely.
It's great.
Absolutely.
But I couldn't help but laugh. I was watching the Channel 10 coverage. The guy who was doing this segment, he talked to Danny Rick and he was just talking to the camera after. And he said, oh, you know, I interviewed Daniel last year and, you know, he seemed really drained and tired before he came here. And he just seemed so enthused and motivated and it's all going to go well. And it was really funny. After the race, I don't know if you saw what Daniel said.
I did. And actually, I meant to mention this, but
Daniel said, he goes, you know what? He goes, I've tried too hard all week to make everyone happy.
Tried to please everyone.
I haven't looked after myself and I didn't prepare for this race well. I'm not going to make that mistake in the future. We're going to have to reevaluate this. I'm not going to do all these media commitments. I need to concentrate on the race and get myself right.
This will be a bit of a thing, I think, with a world champion driver. I think Daniel Ricciardo's got the ability. He's a very happy-go-lucky kind of guy. And I was having a chat to a guy in a cafe this morning about it. He doesn't have the mongrel in him. He doesn't have the guy who'll cut your throat to win the race. Same as we're saying about Valtteri at our last podcast. We're saying we didn't think Valtteri had that attitude either. I'll tell you what, Valtteri's come out with it now, and I reckon Daniel can have that attitude. I don't think he's got it at the moment. He's still the happy guy. But I think give him another season or two and I reckon he'll get that, you know what, I came here to win a world championship and I'm going to do it and I'm just going to go out and beat people for it.
And tread on people's toes a la Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton,
Michael Schumacher. Vettel did it.
Yeah. Senna.
You got to have
a Frost. They all did it.
Yep.
You got to have a certain amount of mongrel in you, I think.
Yep. Mm. Absolutely. All right, guys, good chat about those teams so far. Let's talk about perhaps the Haas. Good race from both the Haas drivers. I can't
believe they did it again.
Another wheel nut.
Both cars out of running last year. They didn't get the wheel nuts on and they've done it to Grosjean again.
Well, this year it was they had troubles with the wheel going. They were about 10 or 15 seconds in the pit stop. They had to swap guns in the pit stop. But it wasn't until 15 laps later that you saw the wheel come loose. So I reckon they cross-threaded it. They got it tight, but it was cross-threaded and it's worked its way loose because they're only like a magnesium or whatever the wheel nut's made out of. So it will fret and break up quite easily.
Yep.
And you just saw them as he pulled off. You suddenly saw the wheel go bloop, bloop and sort of flop around like it was just about, and they've got retaining equipment there to stop the wheel from rolling away. But, yeah, I couldn't believe they did it again.
Unlucky for Romain. He looks like he's turned a corner last year, as we spoke about last week or a couple of weeks ago.
For a small mob, they're a small outfit.
Yep.
They're doing a great job.
Oh, absolutely.
And like you said, you reckon they're going to go fourth. They'll pip Renault this year, which they could have done last year if, you know, there were a lot of mistakes and, you know, teammates crashing into each other. And
and spinning off in Azerbaijan into the wall, under safety car, silly little mistakes like that cost them fourth place.
Yeah.
Mm. On a very, very positive note, K-Mag, he drove a really, really solid race for Haas, had a bit of a tussle at times with Nico Hülkenberg, and he ended up in front of him. I think
those two cannot stand each other.
No, yeah, they hate each other with a passion.
This is probably another story for another episode. But you know, in that Drive to Survive series on Netflix, you really got a good insight into how much those guys dislike each other. There's no love lost at all between those two guys. They'll drive over their each other's grandmothers to get in front of each other.
In the driver's briefing with all the media last year,
yep,
Hülkenberg couldn't resist taking a swipe at Kevin Magnussen. I can't remember the incident that happened on track. They collided. They had a bit of an issue with each other and he's come up and had a go at him and called him the most unsporting person on the grid. And, you know, Magnussen's response was a bit
was suck my.
Yeah. You know, but they genuinely can't stand each other.
Nah, no.
And I think
Magnussen would have loved.
And I think there's been a couple of times where the Hulk's walked up behind Magnussen and tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Great drive, mate," in a sarcastic tone. That's happened a couple of times that I've seen.
I really enjoyed. There was quite a bit of wheel to wheel between those two. You know, the turn one and the turn two and three. I can't remember if there was an overtake between them or not.
It was very close where Hulk came up behind, wasn't quite past him.
Yep.
And Magnussen had the racing line and just shut the door on
him.
Shut it. And then you heard Hulk there on the radio. Why did I not expect that to happen?
That's right. That's exactly what happened. Absolutely. So, yeah, guys, Haas looking good for probably for fourth place in the championship at this stage. We're thinking maybe, yeah, fourth and fifth between
long
them.
Way to go. We'll see how it all pans out.
I think they'll do well.
They're a good team. They're doing really good things.
Mm. They're quite a strong team, and I think they'll do well. Depends how Renault goes this year. So it'll be Renault and Haas will be, the fourth and fifth.
It was funny. Yeah. I saw a clip of Martin Brundle talking to team principal of Haas, and the team principal was saying, you know, we've got 200 and something people in our team. So he goes, we need to do a lot more with less.
Four times the amount of work.
Yeah. And Brundle's reaction was hilarious. Martin's like, you know, that's the amount of people on leave at any given time at Mercedes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, moving on to the rookies, guys, in the race. We had some really good results from the rookies, I believe.
Lando Norris, what a cracking qualifying.
Yeah, man. He qualified, what, eighth or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, got into Q3. What a cracking drive from a a first rookie race driver. And a rookie driver.
Interesting, though, as well, that was done in a Renault engine car. You know, he got into Q3. Danny Ric didn't get into Q3. I just thought it was a sensational weekend for the young lad. And hats off to you, Lando Norris. We were giving you a bit of stick about your name, mate. At, Lando, what's the guy from
Star Wars?
Yes.
Lando Calrissian.
We're giving you a lot of stick about that, but yeah, hats off to him. I hope that Renault McLaren can actually make something of this season. Traditionally, I haven't been a massive McLaren fan, but I've always been an underdog fan, and I really want to see him climb their way back up to the top.
He threw around like it was the Millennium Falcon.
Oh. Yeah, is that the wrong? No.
Lando's the original owner.
My bad. Okay.
You just got to do the Kessel run in under 12 parsecs.
Hashtag Star Wars. Who else? Alex Albon for the Toro Rosso. He finished up 14th, a lap behind. What do we think? You get to see much of Alex Albon, guys. He finished behind Kvyat, 4 places behind. I didn't really get to see enough of him. Anybody?
He had a bit of a run at one of the Haas cars. I reckon it might have been K-Mag.
Was that that train at the end?
No, it was K-Mag came out of pit lane and Albon sort of came up behind him and just had a bit of a crack at him on trying to overtake. Smart enough to have a go, but also smart enough to pull out when he felt like he couldn't make the move done.
Yeah, just get out of the way.
Just he sort of turn one, I think it was. He was on the outside. He could see that he's going to get the door shut on him, and you just saw him lift off just that little bit and didn't get his front wing taken off. I think it was a good, solid drive.
Yeah, mature drive.
Yeah. Correct.
Who else do we have, guys? We had Antonio Giovinazzi. Now, funnily enough, no, we don't have. We've got two massive heads here in the studio. One we thought was actually Antonio Giovinazzi.
No, that is definitely Lando Norris.
Lance Stroll, you mean? And the other one is George Russell. So we managed to pick these guys.
I was distracted by the silver spoon.
Silver spoon or silver knife. Okay, so Antonio Giovinazzi for Alfa Romeo Racing Ferrari, lap behind, finished 15th. His teammate in Kimi finished 8th. We probably should have had a bit of a talk about Kimi as well. Actually, let's discuss Alfa Romeo. Whilst
Alfa had an okay race, Kimi got it home. Over the weekend, he was putting in respectable times and you kept seeing him pop up in practice and qualifying. Early days, I don't know.
Too early to tell, really. And it wasn't Antonio Giovinazzi's – I just love saying that name. It's such a – studly Italian name. It wasn't his first race. He raced here in Australia last year, I believe, and then one or two other races.
And
he
did China 2017. He did two races, China.
Maybe.
And Australia. Actually, it was Australia. Yeah. Because he replaced Pascal Wehrlein.
Yep.
Those two races because he was injured or unwell or whatever was wrong with him in 2017 at the beginning.
He's still new and he'll learn a lot. It's probably not coincidence that you've got Kimi there and a young guy and Giovinazzi there.
Yeah,
but just on the rookies,
being a Ferrari driver, academy driver.
On the rookies, just very quickly, they all outperformed their teammates.
Yep,
every single one.
Apart from
Giovinazzi, I don't count him as a rookie because he's done two races already.
Okay. What about
Albon, Norris and Russell, they all outperformed.
Albon didn't outperform
in quali.
Quali. Yep.
Sorry, my apologies. Should have qualified that.
You need a slap to the face because you need to qualify that qualifying statement.
Youngest grid in terms of average age since, I can't even remember, long time.
I don't think they've ever had a grid this young. Like back in the 1960s or something, the average age was like 56 or something.
It might have been all the way back in the 1950s. It's the youngest driver lineup since then.
Really?
Yeah. So okay. It's been quite some time for the youngest driver lineup. No, but back in 1956, it was like the average age was 56 years old or something ridiculous because that's the only people who could afford to go out racing. And, you know, back then you didn't give it to the young kids.
No. Now, do we need to start drafting a what's the word when you start, you know, writing a, and is it an epilogue? No, you know, a thing for someone's funeral. what do you call that?
Obituary.
Obituary. Thank you. Do we need to start drawing up an obituary for Williams Mercedes? What is going on there? George Russell finished 16th, two laps behind. Robert Kubica finished 17th, three laps behind. Oh man,
I'm a big critic of Williams.
It's pure pain.
I've said it on the podcast before. They're in a world of hurt and they will continue to be in a world of hurt while Claire's running their show. I don't think she's cut out to do it.
Chief Technical Director retired, Paddy Lowe, jumped out just before the season started.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? And he owns part of Williams as well. What's going on there? You know, why has he – well, is it that he's built too pig of a car for two season?
Oh, that team, sorry to any Williams fans out there, but, man,
you'd think someone's going to come in and buy them.
That has to happen. I don't think they can continue with the management.
The best scenario they can hope for is a manufacturer wants to get involved in Formula One.
Yep.
And they create an alliance or just buy them out entirely.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll be bought out entirely. I think you'll find that they'll create an alliance, but I don't think there's any manufacturers out there that really want to come into Formula One at the moment.
Not yet. No.
I don't see any out there at the moment.
This is 2021. We're talking new regulations, new formula. They need to be doing this. They need the answer now so people can prepare for that. And if we are going to get manufacturers on board, they start looking at it now.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's no point, you know, delaying and delaying and delaying, no one agreeing, no one knowing what's going on. And we get to the middle of next year. And they're like, well, I think these are the regulations we're going to have. And you don't have – no manufacturer's got time to figure it out.
The way that this race went for Williams this weekend, if they carry on the rest of the season like this, not only are they not going to get any points for the entire season, they're not even going to get anywhere off the last two positions on the grid. If that was me – As a racer, as a team owner, I'd be like,
and a sponsor,
I'd be pulling the pin. Like,
well, they've lost a lot of their funding.
Mm. Man, yes.
Mr. Stroll waltzed down to Racing Point and opened his checkbook and bought Force India.
Yep. All right, guys. So that's pretty much the race covered.
Before we go to our Bahrain GP preview, Something I thought that was really great was the point for fastest lap. I don't know what the vibe was at the track for that, but watching it on television with the Sky Sports coverage, it was excellent. I mean, you had Bottas saying, you know, I want the 26 points. You know, Hamilton was trying to inquire as to fastest lap and who had it. And
well, Hamilton had a couple of cracks at it.
Verstappen was having a crack.
Leclerc was having a crack.
It was great that they wanted it. And then that hunger for that extra points. I mean, it's 21 extra points over the season. What was disappointing? And I'm really disappointed in Ferrari. They didn't bother. They could have pitted Sebastian. They could have pitted Charles. They could have put fresh tyres on, tried to go for it. They didn't.
But they're a very conservative team, so they're going to play conservatively.
They had the feeling of, you know, why risk a pit stop? What happens if it goes wrong in the pit stop and we stuff all the points?
Yeah.
They would have been concerned that, you know, if they're going for it, will they, you know, overdo it?
Or if a safety – I mean, the thing is, if you did that and the safety car came out, you'd all of a sudden be in the chance for being at the front of the pack and having fresh new tyres on there. And beating coming in for the win.
I think that probably would have alleviated what they did to Charles if they at least brought him in, let him go for fastest lap.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
he would have got a bonus point. It wouldn't affect Seb's tally. I think they were off the mark with that. But I think it was great. It was just you could tell the engineers
they weren't
encouraged by it. They didn't want their guys doing it. Yep. They just wanted to get the cars home safely. You know, the last thing they want is the guys turning the engine up at the end, blowing it. You know, we've already mentioned there's three engines you got for the whole year. So this would be really interesting, the feedback from, you know, what the teams are saying to the drivers and what the drivers actually do.
I think it's interesting that, you know, it's a 21 race series, sorry. So overall there's an extra 21 points over the season, and I heard multiple drivers say when asked about, you know, what do you think about the extra point? And they're like, it's 21 points. So they see it, you know, 25 points for a victory. 21 points is, you know, four fifths and one extra point of a victory. You know, if it comes down to the end of, like, you know, end of the season and, you know, you're
a couple of
points behind and you can get the last two races, you can get those extra 2 points. Man, that's valuable.
And what you're going to see also towards the end of the year, I think, you'll start seeing, you know, if it's a close end of the season, you'll start seeing teams going, oh, hang on, we don't want Vettel to go for the fastest lap. You know, he's 2 points behind us.
Yep.
Hamilton, you need the fastest lap. Yep. And they will do things like, you know, you're 20 seconds in front, pit the engine, turn it up to full quality mode, to party mode, go nuts, boys.
The other interesting thing is, could we see even more points up for grabs in following seasons?
Qualifying?
No, I don't think so much qualifying, but imagine if you put 5 points on the line for fastest lap each race. 5 points, like that's
a lot.
That's a lot of points.
But, you know, but it starts at one. Like, man, that would be mixing things up, because then you're going to get guys who are, you know, coming third and maybe half, you know, 20 seconds behind.
I think five is probably a bit much. You'd start distorting
race wins and things like that. But it would be interesting, because, again, you'd get halfway through the season where you then start getting people pitting in, trying to drive as fast as they can to get, you know, the average pit stop in Melbourne is 23 seconds. So you want to get 23 seconds in front of the guy behind you, so that you can pit, get your tyres on, and then try and do a faster slap.
Imagine
so
if you got 5 points for fifth, it's probably more than that. But, you know, if you pit, get the extra 5 points, then you might leapfrog the guy behind, in front of you.
Correct.
You know, so.
Because you'll start really getting teams to push their engines to get that fastest lap and the win.
And what we wanted to see was more strategy and more excitement in the racing. I think it's just a start, and look, we're getting way beyond it here. But, you know, I thought it was fantastic being at the track ourselves. Dan, we heard lots of people talking about it. Everybody was glued for that last sort of 10 minutes. Even though Daniel Ricciardo wasn't a part of the race anymore, all of the Aussies were, I would say cheering for Valtteri to a large extent.
Yeah.
You know, happy that he not only was winning the race, but him to get that that extra point was just the icing on the cake.
Second to last lap too.
Yeah, it was brilliant. But very interesting to note, guys, that the lap before that, same lap, Max Verstappen also got his quickest lap of the race at a 1:26.2. So his quickest lap of the race was 0.7 behind Valtteri's at a 1:25.5. Yeah, I don't know. Did Red Bull leave it a little bit too late to sort of have a crack, or did they? I don't know.
The three top drivers were all going for that one point. You heard Valtteri saying, "I want 26 points." You heard Hamilton say, "I want that extra point." You heard Verstappen say, "I want that point." They're all gunning for it. They're going to push their cars to the limit to try and get it. And I think we'll see that throughout the season as well.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, look, that was our wrap-up of the Aussie Grand Prix. Unless you guys have anything else extra to add.
No, I reckon we should march on to our Bahrain preview.
Yeah, so...
Not a lot to preview. We've already established...
Well, we've crystal balled
the stats say Valtteri will be on the top step.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's a very hot race over there. Similar time frame to the Australian Grand Prix.
It's held at night as well.
Yeah, it's
or dusk.
Is it held at dusk? Yeah, I think it's a twilight race. What about memorable Bahrain Grand Prix moments, guys? Anybody got anything interesting?
Not a lot of the memorable moments for Bahrain, is there?
I don't know, mate.
2006 was a good one.
Okay, yeah.
Let me guess. Kimi?
Iceman, yeah, Kimi. Good guess. No, he's come from dead last at a track that's not the easiest overtake. Come to third. It was a great race. Fernando, I think, won. Was it, Michael.
What car was Kimi driving then?
He was in the McLaren.
He was in the McLaren back then.
He was in the McLaren. So you had Kimi in the McLaren. You had Michael second in the Ferrari. You had Alonso first in the Renault back when they
were doing well.
Yeah. And I mean, in and amongst that, you had Montoya and Button fighting for the lead, I think, at one point. But a great race with a lot of champions. And Kimi showed really good quality and probably one of the races that helped get him the seat at Ferrari the following year.
Yeah, right.
But that would be, for me, the most memorable one.
Do you know what the most memorable moment for Bahrain Grand Prix is for me? It's driving it on PS3 and just absolutely losing it time after time.
It's one of those tracks.
It's a hard track, I reckon, to nail because it's got a lot of really sharp, like almost 90 degree or even more than 90 degree corners.
Yeah, and lots of sand coming across the track as well. But
it's one of those tracks though. It's on the calendar and they go there and they race and we'll all tune in to see our favourite teams and drivers. But I don't know, it just doesn't feel like there's character to that track.
No, that's it.
Yeah, none of us would go to the Bahrain Grand Prix, would we?
I would. Absolutely. I'd get it every single Grand Prix if I could afford it, but I can't, so.
It's not one that's, mate, like
do
high,
we,
high
do
on my
we
radar.
Need to in that part of the world? We've got Bahrain, we've got UAE.
Abu Dhabi, yeah.
Do we need both of them on the calendar?
Yeah, I think we do.
Is there not a better track out there?
There's been many better tracks out there. I think
they get a huge attendance there.
You'd be better off with another US, American Grand Prix.
They're trying for that anyway. They fell over with Miami.
Yeah.
But I think they're still trying for another American
one. Shout out.
Could you get another South American one on there? Could you get another European one?
Yep. Shout out to the American listeners as well, by the way, guys. Thank you very much for your support and following the podcast. If you think the US should have another Grand Prix, let us know where you think it should be.
Yeah, well, okay. They were planning a New Jersey one.
New Jersey, yeah,
New
right.
Jersey.
Yeah.
It was, you're going to have New York City, the backdrop, lights, man. At night.
That'd be awesome, actually.
That would be unreal.
But I don't know how the people in Jersey and New York will feel about the interruption to their... Because I think their driving around there is pretty tight as it is. There's not a lot of room to move cars around. So all of a sudden you block off half their track, half their roads. Don't think they'd be too pleased about that.
Nah, they'll love it.
They'll love it.
Like we do.
Yeah. All right, guys, look, great show. I loved talking about the Aussie Grand Prix. Sucked, obviously, for Daniel Ricciardo in his home race to not have a great result. But let's hope that he can improve next race and, you know, maybe see the Ferraris turn it up a notch. Thank you very much for your listening to the podcast. If you haven't had the chance to share this with any of your mates, your friends, we'd love you to share the podcast with anyone that you think may enjoy the show. We'd also love to hear your feedback at BoxAussieF1 on the Twitter, or you can check out our Facebook page as well. So once again, thank you very much. We'll catch you next week. Bye for now.
Good night, all.
Take care.